Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome to the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined here by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, you are talking to should we just call this the Aggregator Podcast? Like, should we just?
I think we are Aggregation Nation now. I think that is. I think that's the title that we were bestowed by, you know, one of our friendly colleagues in the media. And I think Aggregation Nation. That's what I went with on my Twitter handle.
Aggregators, mount up.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a cool no, but like so. I can't believe we're in 2021. 2021 now. We're not even 2020.
I know. I said 2020 on Twitter today, and like Pete blew my mind by pointing out that it was 2021. I'm like, oh, that's a good point. I did not remember that.
It's even crazier then that we're still doing this. We're still having the stupid journo blogger feud that like not a single human being outside of our little industry cares about.
I don't know about you, Anthony, but I always salute the frontline workers. And for me, that means, you know, like the people who are going into their jobs right now at like grocery stores and pharmacies and factories and like important places like that, that like keep, you know, this country running. And then, you know, obviously the healthcare workers like are right at the top of the list as well, like incredibly important work that they do. And like, I cannot thank them enough. And like everyone that literally everyone that's leaving the house right now to go and like to your job, like, thank you. Seriously. And this is earnest. Like, I'm about to be sarcastic, but this is very earnest. And then also, you know, like
above like, everybody else, really.
Yeah, honestly, like you right at the top, sports beat writers. So
it's just I love the whole like
I like to watch
beat writers are at the heart of very important professional basketball journalism. Get the bleep out of here.
Look, no beat reporters.
Do you think Tim Kawakami like wakes up in the morning and literally salutes himself like in the mirror? Just
no, he goes to Twitter and he salutes the tweets as they go by from beat reporters, like filing like their morning updates or whatever, or replugging their story from last night. He probably like there's one tear going down his cheek as he salutes at like, in case you missed it last night, my story on, it's like that, you know, like Warriors Cavs or whatever it is.
It's like that scene in Monsters Inc., right? Where everybody is walking to like their stations, their scaring stations, and they're walking all slow and
yeah,
you have like the da da da, you know, the really inspiring.
In Tim Kawakami's mind, that's how beat reporters log on for like a Zoom during the pandemic. Like that's what they look like heading to their laptop in the couch.
I just want to know if Tim Kawakami has ever used information he has gleaned from a question that a different beat reporter asked the athlete.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
that's as evil, inherently evil as we are.
Well, no, look, remember, this is why he got upset with us for getting so quote unquote mad about it was that he put us in the same column as himself. He said his media power rankings, sports beat reporters number one, everyone else number two.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely not an ecosystem with many moving parts and many people in it and whatever. It's kiss the rings of the beat reporters and then everyone else.
Do you think Tim Kawakami's name should be on the little trophy that they give to the player who doesn't give a rat's ass about the award he just got every year for being nice to beat reporters? The Tim Kawakami Award.
They take Magic Johnson. They take Magic Johnson's name off of it and make it the Tim Kawakami Thank You for Being Nice to Me Award.
It could be, actually, I just thought of the name. It's the Tim Kawakami Award for not being angry at beat reporters, even though Tim Kawakami himself made up a falsified article wondering whether or not Kevin Durant was faking an injury for the NBA Finals.
He was just asking a question, Anthony. But you know, like he wasn't reaching any conclusions about it. He was just wondering, hey, is Kevin Durant faking an injury in the finals? And look, we found out he was not.
I'm being 100% serious here. I'm legitimately asking this question. Would you, while you were my editor, would you have let me write that article?
Hell no.
That's all I need to know. Shouts to Tim Kawakami, you freaking jerk.
Yeah, for real. No, that's what the award should be. It shouldn't be for like the player that's nicest. It should be for the beat reporter that is nicest to bloggers.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
There we go.
That's it. We're going to create an award right now.
Yeah.
to the beat reporter.
Tune in next week where we'll give it out to the beat reporter that was nicest to us that week.
Yeah, we can call it the Tim Kawakami Brian Windhorst Ironic Award.
Okay, well, I don't know why you had to throw a second one in. Brian Windhorst has always been very nice to me, so.
He does. He's a
friend of the site, Anthony. You got to put some respect on his name.
He's heard that he's super nice a lot.
He's very nice. He's a very nice man.
The people he gets mad at are the people who
aggregate out of context or misleading aggregate, which, like, look, I get mad at those people, too.
Yeah.
So he and I are on the same page about this. Like.
So what we've decided then...
Tim Kawakami who said that we should be fired for not asking more questions on Zoom, you know?
a blogger will ask a question.
Anthony, we got to move on.
All right. I can't talk about the Lakers. I just have a zillion questions about this guy. Like, how are we still doing this in 2021? What are we doing?
I don't know.
What are we doing? All right, today's show is not going to be all about Tim Kawakami's crusty ass.
As much as he would probably like that and then block the podcast on Twitter somehow. Like,
he's going to block the feed, the RSS feed. Oh, man. So today's show, we're going to talk about... I want to make sure I frame this correctly because I know there are going to be people who are saying, damn it, Anthony Irwin is doing Anthony Irwin things again. I want to make sure that
people
you
say that a lot in my mentions, weirdly. Like,
yeah, I know. But I want to say the way that we're going to frame this is it's super early in the season. Frank Vogel himself said that they're going to be tinkering with a whole bunch of combinations at all kinds of different times during a game. And therefore, I'm kind of curious what kind of tinkering he's going to do with the starting lineup when everybody is healthy. Do you think that's placid enough? Benign enough? Is that a benign enough way to ask that question without having people scream at me about whether or not I think the Lakers suck?
No, honestly, that was great. I'm going to totally diffuse it by making the headline of this podcast, Anthony Demands the Starting Lineup Change.
At Anthony Irwin LA is just...
Yeah, at Anthony Irwin LA demands... Or I'll put like uninformed aggregator who doesn't even ask questions on Zoom demands Frank Vogel change the starting lineup.
That works. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine too. So let's start here. How much data and what kind of data do you consider enough to start wondering about the starting lineup, whether it's how well that starting lineup is performing or how poorly the bench group starts performing because of the way it's built up, because of the type of guys that are used in the first unit.
You mean like sample size over the course of a season before we consider that legitimate?
How big a sample size do you need before you start wondering, hey, you know, should this maybe be looked at again?
Okay, I get what you're saying. So, like, how many games, basically, do we need? Yeah. Like, I mean, for one thing, and I know that you're not saying this, but, like, it's a lot more than seven. At least, unless things are going catastrophically bad, I guess I should rephrase that. It's a lot more than seven with the Lakers, you know, winning as much as they have so far. Like, they've been fine overall.
And they've been blown out by 50 in all seven of those games.
Yeah, I mean, then it's time to re-examine maybe the coach, like, as well, like, not just the lineup. But yeah, it's more than seven games. And again, like, you're not suggesting that it is less than that, especially with how they've played so far. Like, there are pluses and minuses to the starting group, and we've seen some of the good with it. And I think that we've seen some of the trade backs of it and some of the potential, drawbacks. I'm sorry. Like, if I was a real journalist, I'd know how to say that.
I had a typo in that first tweet too.
Livid. Look, if you had an editor, then,
editor, then.
So if we're looking at minutes so far, the starters have played the most of any Lakers grouping. Anthony, can you guess what their net rating is so far?
The starting lineup?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess plus
net rating, not plus minus, just to be clear.
Right. But like their net rating.
Yeah, they're in the plus. They're in the plus. I'll give you that hint.
So I'm going to say plus 17.
24.2.
Damn.
Yeah. And there's some numerology for everyone that's going to be looking for that over the next month.
That Kobe, Derek Fisher respect lineup is what.
Well, also Kobe and Gianna, but.
Yeah. Damn it. That's
good. Yeah. We're going to be getting a lot of reminders like that over the next month, whether they come from numbers or not. But like, I don't want to go for, we'll talk plenty about that, I'm sure, in the next couple podcasts. But like, they've been good. They've been consistently and like pretty significantly outscoring their opponents. Like, so again, like that's yet another point in the column of like, okay, don't change it now. Mm-hmm. And I think that is showing that like, one of my theories on, and like, I'd be curious to hear your reasoning on this and like kind of banging this drum. And I'm sure that we're going to get into that of like, maybe they should look at changing it. But I think that one of the reasons that a lot of people have said, not necessarily yourself, but like a lot of fans and, other people who watch this team have criticized this lineup is that like, I think the flaws are fairly loud. And then like when they're, even when things are going well, like it doesn't always look incredible. But like I have overall like really liked the ball movement of that lineup. I thought they really started to come into their own in yesterday's game. I missed the game live, so I was rewatching and I made it through the first half before I had to do more work. But like in the first quarter, like I thought they came out and their ball movement was really good. But then, the drawbacks are obvious too. Is like Marc Gasol is not the rim protector that the Lakers had last year when they were going through those lineups. And like, look, say what you will about JaVale McGee, he was a rim protector. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, I think that there have been times where, like, as a result of Gasol being a little bit slower of foot than McGee, that, like, Anthony Davis has had to kind of cover more ground defensively, like, hasn't been able to, like, the Lakers have given up easier shots at times, I think, than they were last year. And especially, like, when Gasol's dropping back and a guard just, like, hits a jumper basically, like, right in his face, like, it looks bad. Like, that's a very loud score, basically. Mm-hmm. It just looks like he just conceded a basket, even though he's doing what he's supposed to do. There's a lot of reasons that I think that, like, this has gotten, like, a lot of, words spilled online. Also, it's like, there aren't very many nits to pick with this team. So if you're looking for something, like, how can this team improve? It's like one of the things, okay, they haven't really tried anything different than this yet. It isn't necessarily that it's bad. It's just like, we haven't even looked at any other grouping. So how do we know this is the best one?
Yeah, I don't even look at it necessarily from what that lineup does together while they're out there on the floor. Because I think there are going to be trade-offs. Like there isn't.
There's also the caveat that it has LeBron James and Anthony Davis in it. And so like any lineup featuring those two getting high minutes is always going to have a good net rating. You know what I mean? Like,
I just don't know if the Lakers right now have like an optimal lineup. You know, so especially with AD being, consistently reticent to play the five, I don't think the Lakers have a perfect lineup. So that's one thing that needs to be said. And then, I look at it more from if I was going to make the case for the starting group to be tinkered with. And by the way, like, I'm not even saying like permanent change. Like, I'm just saying I would like to see what this different combination would mean to potentially have this ripple effect elsewhere. And one of the places that where I would maybe look to tinker a little bit is either with Marc Gasol or with Dennis Schroeder.
The Dennis Schroeder hate campaign from Anthony Irwin continues.
He's just too similar to Rajon Rondo is the thing. And like, you know.
It is funny. That's a guy who, like, he got player comps too, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, in the draft. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember he was like little Rondo, because at that time Rondo was like in his prime, and you would get like the, you know, Dennis Schroeder would go out there, and they even kind of shoot similarly too, where they have that like chicken elbow out ball right by their ear kind of release. So there's a lot in common there. And so anytime I see Dennis Schroeder out there, it just reminds me of Rajon Rondo. And I just say, like,
that, no, I can't play
during the regular season.
See, he reminds me of playoff Rondo. And so, like, I'm like, yeah, this is fun. We're watching the playoffs again. Like,
yeah. But yeah, I would just, so the way I'm kind of looking at it is, if you look at the Lakers' number of like creative players, right? Players who are capable of creating for others on any given possession, it is LeBron, Schroeder, Marc Gasol, AD a little bit. And then that's probably about it, you know, like in terms of primary create, like guys who are capable of being primary creators.
I think not consistently, but I think Kuz has shown that he has that in his bag at times. But again, that's not a guy that you're going to want to like just do that with, like every single game.
Therefore, isn't like inherently that isn't a primary creator.
Yeah. And so, and then I guess like the disrespect to Talen Horton Tucker is palpable.
I've kind of calmed down on the Talen Horton Tucker thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was messing with you. Like, he's like basically a rookie, you know, like he's a sophomore, but he's basically a rookie. He has his flaws. And like, yeah. So in all seriousness, I think I agree with your assessment, but like those are the main playmakers that you want.
And so long as those four playmakers are all with one unit, what is that going to mean for the second unit?
Yeah, it's like the opposite of the problems that like everybody always like used to say with like LeBron's old team, like Heat teams and the Cavs team. Like, there's only one ball. Like, now it's like there's only one ball. Like, how many passes can they make? Like,
right, yeah, right. Well, that's a good point too. Is that like I don't mean this in that like, because the basketball that first unit plays together is legitimately pretty. It's a very appealing form of basketball that I really enjoy watching. So again, I'm not. You can tell,
especially when they go to Gasol early, it's infectious. Like, they really start looking for that extra pass. Like, he is like a, like I described him the other day as basically like he's like a 7-foot version, a super plus version of like what Alex Caruso gave the Lakers offense last year. And that he's just a guy that like kind of keeps things moving really well. And he obviously has way better passing and floor vision than Caruso does. Being 7 feet, like, and seeing over the defense will help with that. But like, you know, that's almost what it reminds me of. It's just like when he's on the floor, just the offense flows really well, especially when they go through him.
Yep. And but that is kind of why I would like to see for a game or two, just tinkering around, because you have 72 games. Like, at this point, we've seen enough from the Lakers to be able to know there is no scenario outside of injuries in which the Lakers are not making the playoffs and probably won't have home court advantage in the first round too. Like, there's something would have to go seriously wrong for them to fall down to like a 5 seed. And I just don't see that really happening here. So what does that mean? Well, let's have a little bit of fun with these guys. Let's see what the game looks like with Schroeder coming off of the bench with that second lineup, so that they do have a primary creator in that group. One reason why I would really like to see it with Gasol rather than Schroeder is because I just think Gasol is more creative than Schroeder.
He also works with Kuz really well. And so it's like trying to find more minutes for those two guys would be undoubtedly a plus for the Lakers in some respects.
And we've already seen Vogel want to, you know, that he'll play Montrezl Harrell next to AD and have Harrell play ostensibly the five. So you could try that to start the game. And then see what that bench unit looks like with Gasol there. And basically all I'm basically looking at is let's just tinker with this. It's kind of like, so for example, I have an old fashioned recipe that I basically stick to all the time. And I know that every time I make that drink, it's going to be this amount of good. That said, every so often I'll switch up the bitters. I'll change the whiskey. I'll use smoke instead of the zest from the orange peel to provide a different aromatic experience. all of these things, like I know how to make this one cocktail and I know how to make it pretty well, but let's see what else it might taste like. And I think here with the Lakers, it's kind of like we know what this team's floor is. I still don't think we know what the ceiling is because it's way too early. But we now know we have the foundation laid for what this team is capable of. Let's tinker here a little bit. Let's see what this group looks like under these circumstances. And you know, this is something that Frank Vogel said. He was the only reason really that you and I are talking about this is because Frank Vogel said he was going to do that kind of tinkering. And so I want to take a quick second. And when we come back, I want to talk about like why some things that he might consider tinkering with might be off limits and some of that as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So you seem to have taken what Frank Vogel said differently than I did.
Yes. Yeah. Like a typical aggregator, you know, you were not on that Zoom call and you were not on the front lines of this fight for information to figure out, you know, Yeah. The front online. And so like, you know, it is me coming back, you know, basically like, you know, if you look at it, like basically like sports war correspondent, like they're the same thing. And like, you know, it is me coming back here to tell you the stories of these battles I've went through. And, you know, like the way that I took
you're sitting there drawing a map in the sand, just like the,
yeah, exactly. Like I'm like, here's where Anthony Davis is going to play. And, I think, Like number one, I just want to say that I appreciate that your analogy a second ago before the break justified your like the reason and you know your constant drinking as like you're just experimenting with old fashioned recipes. You know that sounds a lot better, and I'm sure that like has worked great on Jen. You're like no, I'm not drinking again. I'm trying to find the best old fashioned recipe that I can do. I'm just tinkering with my lineups a little
bit. This is just and like the scientific process at work, Harrison.
Exactly. So if you guys are wondering where all of Anthony's takes come from, it's that he's constantly experimenting with different old-fashioned recipes.
you can tell based on the caliber of typos or the number of typos how many old-fashions I have experimented with.
Like when he calls for like a coach that has like a successful record so far that season to be fired, like that's when he did the smoke instead of the orange peels and stuff like that. So like there's different effects on his takes that each of these has. But like, no, so in the context of when Frank was talking about this, he was asked specifically about what he saw from that closing lineup, mm-hmm. which is why I think that he was mainly referring when he was talking about tinkering. Like at that night, I believe they had played, it was like Trez and AD were the front court, and mm-hmm. he was being asked what he saw from that lineup, if he liked it. And he was basically saying like, look, like we're going to have Mark there sometimes, we're going to have Trez there sometimes, like we'll have Markeith there sometimes, like essentially, you know, hinting at the main thing that's going to change from those starting lineups. And I'm sure there's like one other spot up for grabs there, like potentially a shooter spot or, you know, whoever. But like, I think like it's mostly like he's talking about, okay, who am I pairing with AD down the stretch? I want to get different looks at this. And like the reason that I don't see the starters changing is that number one, like Frank has talked about that he only mainly wants to see this year at center, like Trez and like Mark, like they know the AD at center is a weapon that they can go to. And what he didn't say, but what I think is like kind of tacitly implied is that they just don't want to tax him like that, which I think is totally understandable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in this shortened of a season coming off the turnaround that they had, like I think them not wanting to go to that weapon more than they have to is totally reasonable, especially since they know how devastating that is like at times. And so like, I'm just not sure that I can see Frank Vogel as defensively minded as he is. And like, the thing that he always talks about is defense. Like that is his go-to. That's where he made his bones coming up. That is what he's going to talk about when you ask him what is wrong with the team. He's never going to start with an offensive thing. It's always going to be a defensive thing. And So I think that, like, you know, I just cannot see him voluntarily just saying, hey, I'm going to start Trez at the five. Like, I just don't see it, you know, based on kind of what he values and, like, also just kind of what he said so far. I think this starting lineup, like, do I think that they could experiment and try some different things? Sure. Like, I'm just not sure that I expect them to do so at this point. And, like, I just don't know, like, for me, like, I just don't know if it's important enough. It would be important enough, even to me, with how things are going, to want to mess with that, really, and change it up when you can experiment with different lineups all throughout the game, and then you can kind of, like, have that in your back pocket for the playoffs. But that said, the counterpoint is the starters play by far the most minutes together, so maybe, like, in a normal rotation, so maybe you do want to experiment with that just to get higher volumes of looks for those other groupings.
Yeah, I just, the way I kind of look at it is, I'm not going to be sitting here and banging the drum of this is a different, you know, the team is underachieving in any way, which way, just, you know, any which way, just because of this one thing that they aren't doing. Right. And
learned your lesson from last year.
What's that?
You learned your lesson from last year.
Well, but like, so even if you're going to bring up last year, right? So one of the things that the Lakers really did was they did kind of do things that cost them wins over the course of the regular season because it made them a better playoff team.
But right? Not really changing the starters.
Right. At least not right. Without it wasn't as drastic injury. As changing the starters, but you know, they went to some things. They stuck with Rondo in ways that regular season Rondo didn't deserve the amount of leeway he was given. But then we saw come the postseason that sticking with him paid dividends. And I think here with the starting
post up too was another example of that.
Yeah,
really work. Paid dividends. Like they did this stuff. I'm not disputing that they didn't. They just didn't change the starting lineup very often to do it.
Yeah, and well, what I'm interested to see is that like the one place that Vogel is you know, so in baseball you have the theory of the Dodgers like to move guys all around the baseball field and up and down the lineup. And more old school fans and analysts will say, well, it makes it really difficult to get into a rhythm if you aren't sure heading into any game, where you're going to be playing in the field, where you're going to be batting in the lineup. And so that's reason enough to not tinker with that stuff in and of itself. The other side of that, though, is, well, if you have versatility on your roster, you're not utilizing it if you aren't tinkering and if you aren't trying to tailor your lineup or who's playing where in the field based on whoever you're playing that night. And so it's going to be kind of interesting here. It seems like Vogel is more old school where he does want consistency with the starters so long as health allows you to be able to be that. And then, you know, also is kind of very concerned about, since this group is going to play the most together, well, let's make sure that group is maximized. The counter to even that, though, is that like it very clearly wasn't maximized, and he stuck with JaVale over Dwight for long stretches of the season because Dwight was in a more important bench presence. And so for this, it's going to be, you know, we are now seven games into this thing, and we still have yet to see where Vogel is or isn't willing to go with these tinkerings. I just, you know, one of the things I would like to see at some point is, well, let's see what it looks like when KCP is out there with the starters alongside, you know, somebody else in the backcourt. And then you have your LeBron, AD, and whatever big it happens to be there. On games where Marc Gasol can't go, right? If he's getting a night off or something like that, what is AD still not going to play the five?
I've been thinking about that a lot too, because like, look, history will tell us, and like Marc Gasol is, how old is he now? He is
not young.
He's 35. He's going to be 36 by the end of the season. So like, basically same age as LeBron, a little younger. Mm-hmm. And you know, each of the last two seasons, he has missed significant, you know, like portions of time. and like during his team's regular seasons with injuries. And like, you know, I look, this is not me, knock on wood. Like, I hope Mark does not get injured, but at his age, it's likely that some little thing at the very least will nag him at some point.
If anything, and it'll be smart to give him a night off every so often, even if he isn't hurt.
That too. Yeah. And so like, I think there will be times where he has to sit out, and I will be very curious to see what Vogel goes to there. The other thing that I think is important context here, and like, this is kind of pushing back on my own point of like Vogel not changing the starters, but like, he may be more receptive to it than maybe I'm making out, because the other, like, there, one way to view like Vogel is like, he's the old school guy. He doesn't change the lineups, which, by the way, that analogy made me picture Frank Vogel in like a baseball uniform, like what he would like. And then it made me picture him in a basketball uniform, like if they force coaches to wear the same uniform as the players.
Not even warm-ups. I mean, honestly,
yeah,
what coaches are wearing now for games isn't that far off from like a warm-up jumpsuit.
It would be, I miss coaches
wearing suits. Can I just, am I allowed to say that?
That you miss coaches wearing suits?
I miss
you don't get it.
Wearing suits.
Oh, no, I don't. I could not care less. I'm team comfy life all the way. So, like, if it was up to me, I would show up every single day to work in sweats.
But
I have during the
coaches,
pandemic.
Like, some suits are just flattering, whereas they're wearing this, like, kind of softer.
Anthony, you know, I see
stuff. Like, I'm watching Stan Van Gundy right now, man. And I'm just saying, Stan Van Gundy could afford to wear a suit. Like, I
see, like, there are some
could
coaches
be aided
who,
by.
Like,
the you know, kind of more streamlined lines that a suit provides.
See, I think there's
right
something
now
to
he
be
looks
said
like
for
a
like,
cue ball.
I'm not gonna. There are some coaches that you can tell like have style. Like they like to wear different, you know, outfits. Like they like Monty Williams is like a very stylish coach. Like has a bunch of different suits, a bunch of different looks. Like is a very like, I mean, he's a former NBA player, so he probably like, you know, like he understands fashion. Like he's in shape. Like he looks good. Like there are other coaches like Tom Thibodeau. Like, do you think he cares? Like, I just feel like the suit is dishonest a little bit at times, like when it's forced to wear them, because like Tom Thibodeau, like, he didn't pick that suit out. He doesn't want to be wearing that suit. There's something dishonest about, like, Tom Thibodeau not being, like, covered in, like, pretzel crumbs and, like, a stained sweatsuit or something. Like, because you know that on a day-to-day basis, that's what he looks like. He's just, like, they, like, knock on his door and he, like, comes out in the morning and whatever and, like, you know, he's been watching film all night, whatever. Like Vogel is not a guy like that is going to be wearing suits of his own accord. Like, if it was up to Vogel, you know, like he would be in, you know, like just a, like a different pair of sweats for that day. And, you know, because he was up all night watching film. And like, I just think that there's something dishonest about it, which is, again, like neither here nor there. But yeah, I just think
the whole
like
point of a suit is to like forcing, not have to be so honest someone, about what your neck down looks like.
But if they don't want that, then like, I respect that even more. Like, you know, so like that's where. But anyway, this is not anywhere. This is a complete tangent from where I was going with this. But like, I think that last year's context with the starters was a little different in terms of Dwight and JaVale, where like JaVale, you know, again, this is not reporting. So aggregators, chill out, Anthony, chill out. Do not aggregate this. But like, you know, I would not be surprised if there was some kind of promise made to JaVale, like, we're going to start you during, at least during the regular season. Mm-hmm. Like, this is something that's clearly valuable to you the last 2 years.
They
might have
made that same promise to Mark.
Yeah, and they may have. But, like, the thing that is, I guess, different, I mean, Mark did take less to come here for the veterans minimum, so maybe he wanted a starting guarantee in there. He doesn't necessarily seem like that kind of guy, but maybe he is. Like, I don't have a great sense for Mark yet on
what he cares
about.
There's one thing we know about the Gasols is that they are just classically impossible to deal with and work with.
Yeah, well, no, look, Pau didn't like having his role moved around. Mark has, at times, like, bristled when coaches have asked him to do different things. Like, in Memphis, he, you know, that was an issue with Dave Yeager, or not Dave Yeager, Fizdale. And so, like, you know, he is a guy who is a creature of comfort to some degree. So maybe he does really want to start, but maybe he doesn't. I don't really know. It does make me wonder, because like for JaVale and Dwight, it was very clearly like a JaVale plays harder when he starts. We saw the year before, he gets in a little bit of a funk when he feels like his role is threatened. Dwight was very kind of like came in, you know, like he was in a different situation where it's like, you have to do exactly what we say, you know, like to even get this chance to come in and play for this team. Whereas like Trez was not like that and Mark was not like that and whatever. So like these guys may have a little bit more room to kind of voice what they would like versus Dwight, like last year, basically like had to come in, toe the line. If he, he wasn't going to start. He had to deal with that, accept it. He had to come out very clearly to JaVale and say, look, I'm not looking to start and take your job. So it was a very different personality dynamic. And so maybe this year, like, Frank is a little bit more open to changing things just because both guys kind of want it at times, and you have to juggle that a little bit. But again, like, it's so soon, we don't really know who that's important to. And who knows, maybe Trez wants to defend his sixth man of the year title, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and Dennis starting, he can't steal votes from him this year. Maybe that's something that's important to him. But yeah, I don't know, like, where all of that is at. But I guess there are, my point is, you know, before we went on the managers, you know, coaches suits tangent, was that the personality dynamics may be different. And so maybe that was less of a Vogel thing, and we shouldn't assume necessarily that it was. So maybe he is a little bit more flexible and will change this.
Next time, since you're doing the very honest work, can you ask Vogel how he feels about not wearing a suit? Like,
he got asked on the Low Post, and I think he said, I actually don't remember what he said. Yeah, I'll ask him.
I'm just kind of curious because to be completely honest here, when I was coaching high school basketball, I did wear a suit. I had my suit still, so I may as well just use it.
That's hilarious to picture you, like, every other coach in the league is probably like, who is this kid wearing a suit? They're like showing up in track suits, like just like laughing at you. You got your hair slicked back like Pat Riley. Like,
I rented a Ferrari for the games.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I'm an older soul, I guess. I wore suits a lot growing up.
Back
so.
In my day, coaches respected the game and wore a suit.
That's all I'm saying. We respected the game and we respected our beat reporters. Like, that's.
Yeah, actually, I will ask Frank about the suit thing, but I'll ask him first if he would like to salute and thank us for our service, you know.
How much do you care about the media award every year?
Oh, just well, Frank absolutely cares. Frank came in day one last year and said he was looking to win that award and did not win it. But like is genuinely incredibly kind to the media and like really does try to give you real answers. And yeah, he does seem like a genuinely good dude. You never know these people because we interact with them through scrums or whatever. Like, you know, it's a very inorganic environment, but he does seem like a very genial and kind person.
That's good. All right. Well, Now that we have made,
and I would vote for him for my "You Were Nice to Us" award if I had one and was not rejected from Pro Basketball Writers Association membership. So
I was kind of curious, like, what does it take? Because I know, like, coming up, it was, you know, you had to get paid for a certain amount of time and be credentialed for a certain amount of time. I guess they just hate bloggers.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'll cede to the Isaiah Thomas gif on that one.
All right. That's going to do it then for this episode of the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. Go ahead and get super angry and make sure you at Laker Film Room for everything that you hate about what it is that Harrison and I just talked about. This is going to be a super long season. And every so often a thought creeps into our brains and we say, you know what? We'd like to kind of see this. We'd like to talk about this. And that's where we found ourselves for this episode.
And I just want to say to everyone, just remember to, you know, like, just thank your local beat reporters. Thank Tim Kawakami. Just let him know on Twitter that you really appreciate his service and crusading for the causes that are truly the most important in our times.
Yeah, I mean, every time somebody sends out a tweet, even remotely about the NBA, and you think that they may or may not have asked a question there, just say thank you. Say thank you in their.
Why, thank you for your service.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, especially if Tim Kawakami hasn't blocked you yet, I'm asking all of you to just go thank him for every tweet he sends and see how well he likes that. That would be great. That'd be fantastic.
Oh, I would be so proud of all of you.
Have a great rest of your day, everybody. And we'll be able to whoever is doing their show tomorrow, we'll pick right back up on this and see if they show the same amount of respect to the reporters who are all heroes out there. Doing God's work.